You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I am at Qua. It's a restaurant here in Orange County in Little Saigon, and I am joined by Key Concepts founder, Viet. Viet, welcome to the Vietnamese podcast today.
Very honored to be here.
You know,
good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you. You've been on a few times, and every time it's a wild ride with you. Yeah. And we started today talking about, just our private conversations. We're talking about the changing landscape of the economy as it relates to the U.S. and to China. And I sometimes feel pessimistic about, you know, labor and mm-hmm. the direction of young people in the world today. But before we get to all of this stuff, I think we're going to get to this recognition of your James Beard semifinalist award. And congratulations for even, you know, finding yourself in the James Beard ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, that was very surprising to me. To be honest, for the last 23 years, putting my hat down to work, I have heard about James Beard. I've heard about all the accolades. Obviously most people would know Michelin, but I've heard about all of these accolades. But I never really brought myself to fully understand.
Yeah.
So it was very funny because that morning when I woke up, I see a lot of texts from friends, from family. The OC Register called and say, "Do you know that you're being nominated for James Beard?" And I was like, "Oh my God, I'm very thankful and all that." And then the moment I hung up the call, I was like, okay, let's look what James Beard is all about. So I actually did not fully understand. I didn't grasp the concept. So I went on Google and I searched for James Beard. It took me the whole day to really fully understand how big it was.
Yeah.
Because it was also like, which category,
right?
But the category I was in was Best Chef California, which is one of the...
And this is for NEP, the restaurant, NEP Cafe, one of the restaurants that...
Very surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that whole day, toward the end of the day, I was like, okay, this is actually pretty big, and not any other chef in California, Vietnamese chef, have ever gotten this before. And so, all right, well, semifinalists, this is a big deal. That's when I fully grasped the concept and, thanking my team. And it's just... kind of show the dedication of the team and the people that got me here. I think this kind of validates this country in a sense, where you put your head down, you work really hard, and the people that help you get there. This is not my win, right? This is to show that all of the people who trusted my vision and help me get here, this is all their work. They're doing the real work every day.
Right.
And I'm just here, gluing them together as a team.
Yeah.
So this is for them.
And it's inspiring because I've been at NEP and you've actually opened up your doors at NEP for our film events and, for the Viet International Film Festival at Vala. So it's inspiring to see James Beard put you on the map with this.
Yeah, it's also a win for Little Saigon.
Yeah.
I think, being that category is one thing, one of the highest category, but then you also putting, this is NEP Cafe, but they pick Fountain Valley, right? Instead of Irvine, which is good. So now we know Fountain Valley get one, right?
Yeah.
So
it's well, congratulations.
For the team.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're sitting today at your newest restaurant.
Yes.
Qua. I'd love to hear how you've developed
into this concept because it's a Chinese concept. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're right in the heart of Little Saigon. And to have a Chinese restaurant led by you, which your name is Viet in Vietnam, and to have a Chinese restaurant concept here.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful space, as you know, people can see. It's a gorgeous restaurant.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The build out on this one, the total investment was way exceeding $8 million. So it's really, really a big investment. People ask us all the time too, like, why here in the little middle of Little Saigon, you know, spending this much money. But in this plaza alone, like, we have spent way more than, you know, as close to $20 million possible.
Yeah.
In total investment of all of the restaurant that we have in here. But that kind of speaks to our commitment to the community. Whereas I think as investment, and we talked a little bit about private conversation, investment does not come into Little Saigon anymore. The people that make money here now start to invest elsewhere. So how do we pull investment back into Little Saigon? And I follow two distinct philosophies. The first one would be, obviously, you gotta give back to the place or the people or the community that,
right,
that get you here. And so, I mean, without Little Saigon, I wouldn't be here today. So I have to somewhat feel obligated to give back and to stay back here. And why everybody venturing out, you know, if everyone is investing elsewhere, who's going to be investing here? But we cannot forget that Vietnamese people in the U.S. is very, very successful. And there's also 2.2 million of us that live in the U.S. And this is the capital of it.
Yeah.
Right? And not to say that in the next 25 years or so, the WHO already envisioned that Vietnam will be the top three GDP country in Southeast Asia, the largest top 10 economy in Asia in the next 25 years. We have 100 million people there. The economy right now is about $420 billion GDP or so. It's going to get to $3 trillion by the year 2050. So knowing that that country is going to 6x the GDP in the next 25 years.
What are we doing here now?
What are we doing? Like, no, not just that, but like, they are looking to invest elsewhere. They're not going to just hold a VND forever. They're going to want to hold USD. They want to be investing in, you know, all over the world, obviously. But I think one of the safest way for them to park all of the assets in the future is also Europe, right? In the Euro and in the US. And so having a capital of the largest Vietnamese group outside of Vietnam being very strong and prosperous is a way to go.
How do you keep this going when it's clearly on a downtrend and Vietnam is on an upswing, right? And the temptation for, I think, business people is to say, Vietnam's growing. You know, by 2045, you know, currently Tho Lam wants to make it like blow past Singapore, right?
Yes.
How do you, as a business owner with multiple restaurants, with the restaurant group so strong in Little Saigon, say, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to build it until they bring the VND to invest here? Like, how do you have the courage to maintain that strength to stay?
Well, like I said, I follow the different philosophies there. But the first one I already explained is that we need to be the bridge, right? And if anybody that want to come here and invest, you know, there has to be a company that is trusted, that is, you know, publicly, you know, being reviewed often, and having a name in the community. Yeah.
To bring it back, let's bring it back to this breadth of Chinese cuisine and why you made the
and
decision.
And I'll explain that too.
Yeah, yeah. Would love to hear why you chose to bring this beautiful restaurant that's based in Chinese cuisine here into Little Saigon.
Well, it has a personal story for me because my grandma, last name is Vu, right? And the Vu Vo last name came to Vietnam in the 8th century, a long time ago. And, you know, obviously they landed in Haiphong and Haiyang and that area. And they create that little, that's technically one of the first few Chinatown in Vietnam.
It's the Minh Hung group, right? It's that's what long Chinese camp, people are called.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, like specifically, you know, if you have a last name Vu or Va,
yeah, Chinese.
That's Chinese.
Okay.
Right. And so from the 8th century, they kind of like there, and you know, for centuries there, they lived there. And so my grandma already has a Chinese last name. So she's technically Chinese, yeah. Vietnamese, right? And obviously after 1975, she moved to the South, and my dad grew up there, and I just happened to grow up in the largest Chinese quarter.
Jilung?
Yeah, but it's Jilung is just like where it's kind of sprout, yeah, out, right? Mm-hmm. So it actually cover District 5, District 6,
right, right.
You know, 10 and 11. So it's pretty big. A lot of people didn't know, but you know, at that time, the Chinese quarter, which is short for Kwa, Chinese Quarter, Chinatown. Mm. Or Kwa is also overcome. But, you know, so I grew up in District 11, but I go to school in District 5. So, and I kind of hang out in that area.
Yeah.
And so grow up, I eat more Chinese food than actually Vietnamese food. So it's just like a very personal thing for me. And I always think, you know, I wanted to do Chinese. You know, it's just the hardest cuisine, yeah, for us. And so from our point of view in the human history, if you really look back into all the cuisines, there's only a few that really define who we are. And Chinese is the longest running, right? Over 4,000 years old scripture being found. So longest running in human history. And so we thought that was very important for us to understand and master. And people keep asking all the time, like, why do you keep doing all random cuisines? And it's not random. We pick them for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
For Western side, the Italian cuisine has been the bedrock of the Western civilization. The Italian introduced wine, cheese making, all of the pastas, you know, so that's technically all the Western cuisine that you know about it. The French, later on, after the revolutions, they're really poor, so they're like, all right, we're going to create, using the brigade system, we're going to train chefs that way in the military side of things, and we're going to take, you know, all the knowledge of Italian cuisine, and just, we spread it across Europe, right? And so the French really master it, like standardize it. You know, Escoffier was the guy who really standardized it and really take it and you know, bring it to the world. And then on the Eastern side, obviously Chinese cuisine is the longest running. And then the Japanese really master it. If you really look at all the cuisine that we have, you see that, right?
Got
Italian,
it.
You got Chinese, you got French, and you got the Japanese. We picked those four for a reason, because understand those four.
You got the bedrock of everything.
Yeah, the bedrock of whole entire human civilization.
Yeah,
and from there, then you can go into more distinct cuisines, and then you learn more about it. Like the next frontier for us probably going to be, you know, Indian, right? Understand. Mm-hmm. So even before understanding like Thai or Cambodian and all that, you have to understand China. India.
Mm-hmm. India.
With that. So China is what we're doing right now. So we're learning it. But once you understand India, then you understand the trade routes, right?
Yeah.
And all of the countries in the middle and how they developed all of their cuisine. And so little known facts to most people, like, you know, what is the number one restaurant group in the US? And a lot of people say McDonald's. McDonald's has the most. I think it was like 13 or 20 something thousand restaurants. But
Panda Express?
Not just Panda Express, but Chinese restaurant in America outperform all of
like aggregate
restaurant, restaurant in the whole entire
Chinese cuisine. Okay.
Chinese cuisine is actually the number one.
I didn't know that. Dominate
the whole entire US. The total amount of restaurant, including Panda Express, including Pickup Sticks, including all of the Chinese restaurant. And a lot of people don't really fully understand this, but when we say that Din Tai Fung is one of the most successful
chains
right now, doing, you know, average of $27 million per a pop, they didn't get there by mistake. For the last century or so, Chinese people has laid out the groundwork across the U.S. Everywhere you go, people know what Chinese cuisine mm-hmm. is. Some might never try sushi before, mm-hmm. but I have tried Chinese food. So that's the fun facts about it. And so as Chinese being the number one, I would say, minority cuisine in the U.S., outperforming Italian
and Mexican
and Mexican, outperforming all of them.
Wow, I did not know.
Yeah, so that's a little known fact.
Okay,
so, but that's not why we do that.
Why do you say Chinese food is the hardest food?
Well, first of all, it has over 60 different regional cuisines.
So the variety is immense.
Just immense. They have like 1.5 billion people that live there. And just, it's crazy to really think about it, but every single region is different. And they have eight mains, right? They have eight main cuisines, which right now we're trying to like capture them all. But really they have over 60 plus regional cuisines.
Yeah.
How much do we have? We have like three, right? North, middle, and south. And we're already struggling with like representing them. And so, you know, representing a culture like that is very difficult. And that's why right now, I think most people still do not understand what Kwa is all about. We're still now self-opening. It's going to take a while for us to kind of get through the self-opening and then reintroduce ourselves into the grand opening and then have people to come in and really fully understand what we're trying to do. It's just so this massive.
This is an experiment.
It is an experiment.
It's a huge
Key concept is a whole entire experiment. Every single concept has been an experiment. Yeah. You really think about it.
So that's the way we go back to Chinese food and how it relates to the direction, right? There's so many different, like we said, different lanes, but how do you vote? How do you, in your mind, how do you decide on what dishes that you're going to include?
You don't. The customer to decide. So you push out as much as you could.
Okay.
Customer will vote with their dollars.
And then you just go back to the POS.
Yeah, you go back to the POS and then just take out all the low seller. You double down on a high seller and you keep running your marketing on the top sellers. That's it.
So empirically on data and numbers, what are the top cuisine Chinese-wise?
Well, right now we don't do that per cuisine because we do mix and match some of the cuisines in some of the dishes sometimes. So I still think people still so relating to Cantonese just because they grow up eating a lot of Cantonese. Me too. I mean, I grew up eating Cantonese, so I'm always leaning toward Cantonese. But having a sprinkle of, you know, mala flavor or, you know, Sichuan and, you know, Chongqing styles stuff in there some way, shape, or form is also helpful and, you know, kind of open people's palate up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's a fine line between knowing that, like, Sichuan's kind of hard to eat, if you think about it. Yeah. It's really spicy. There's some very specific flavors with, like, peppercorn, right? But Cantonese is, like, very accessible for all of us, right? But then at what point do you say, I'm going to be inventive and I'm going to introduce to the Vietnamese community or to, you know, the mass general people, I'm going to try to make certain flavors pop and you're going to like have to, you're going to have to try this. But then you're like sacrificing data. You know that Cantonese is going to sell more. It's more popular. How do you balance the trajectory of the business?
Well, I think it's kind of warranted to use that word, courageous, right? So you just have to have the courage
to
try.
Do it. Yeah.
Putting your business at risk, obviously, right? But I think people trust us enough to know that, yes, it's risky that you're trying different things on the menu, but more likely than not, they're going to enjoy it. You know, it's same with last time you brought a friend over and we technically throw everything at you, not knowing
which one. I was telling your crew that. I was like,
not knowing which one you're going to enjoy. But I really think if you just keep an open mind, I think most of the food that we bring out, you're not going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
You know, we put a lot of thought into all of them and just have the courage to just keep trying. You know, I think that's important.
There's a company out in the U.S. called the Hillstone Group. Do you know it at all?
Yes, I've heard of them.
Okay. So they're in charge for like Houston's, the steakhouse. And they do everything right. And when I think about the version of the Vietnamese Hillstone group, I think of Key Concepts. Because you walk into it and you just know the branding is very subtle, but it's you could see the genetic tie-in of all the places that you do. Key Concept, Key Cafe, Ini, Nep, Hua. They all have this sort of like, you know, it's highly stylized. The food is always consistent. And it's just like with the Hillstone group, it's there's a vision there. And the services are, you know, you've elevated the services here in Little Saigon.
The toughest part for us is that, you know, with those groups, they always choose metropolitans. Like if they go to Southern California, they're probably gonna just go LA.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge for me, knowing for a fact that any of our restaurant, if we're in LA, we do much better.
Wow.
Like if I just do, that's why like, just outside of here, I'll just tell you right now, Bonner Park, Irvine, we outperform this whole entire area.
Really? That's heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking to know, knowing for a fact that if we just do this anywhere else, we do much better. But I still choose to do it here. Because I'm so connected to this community and I want to contribute and I want to do more, we don't have enough sales here.
Oh boy, wow. But Key Cafe seems to be just popping every time I go in.
Of course. I mean, it was some concept would be much easier to approach just because the price point is lower, right? So you know to go to Key Coffee House, you're not going to spend more than $10.
Got it.
And so most people feel more comfortable. Coming here though, however, they have to spend a little bit more. Art Inai, but the community though, once they catch on to it, they catch on to it. Inai across the street there took 2 years to catch on.
Wow.
And so I still have faith in this community to pull, right? And I still have faith that we will eventually figure it out and people will come. And once they know, you know, how we do things here and how important it is for them to support, they will. For like this restaurant particularly, we still haven't touched catering. We still haven't touched events. We still haven't touched, you know, meal services, which is like bento box services and meal prep. There will be a lot more sales to be made.
Yeah.
And so we're confident in the fact that now, as long as you have the infrastructure, sales are gonna come. But first, we have to do the right thing. We have to create good food and have the best experience. We still don't think we are there yet because we're still in a soft opening period.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll get there.
Where do you get the stamina to keep all of this going?
So, also, a lot of people ask me, oh, yeah, congratulations on James Beard. You know, like, how did you get here? And, you know, how did you create a company that right now, like, you know, we're going to annualize at $100 million this year, right? Or close to it.
Yeah.
How did you create a $100 million company? And the answer is one step at a time. I don't know. I just wake up every day and go straight to work. Last night, I didn't sleep until 3, right? Still writing reports, still writing plan for the future, doing a lot of analysis. I'm doing a lot more strategy now.
Yeah.
Still talking with my partners, everyone, you know, on the other side of the globe. Wake up in the morning, obviously come here and have a meeting after this. And I'm probably gonna work all day until closing and go home. 15, 16 hours a day is very normal. 7 days a week and just the last 23 years. So it's essentially, if you ask, I'm like, yeah, I mean, if you're willing to give up all the parties, you know, what are you looking at? Like, I'm 39, so like, I just started to go out this year, travel this year, I think. For the last 39 years of my life, has always been saying no to friends, to parties, to...
Yeah, you're always drinking. In the kitchen. I've always seen you.
In the office or I'm doing research somewhere. You know, choosing not to have a lot of friends, choosing not to go to parties, not choosing not to go to anything fun and just putting my head down every single day, 23 years straight. That's what it's going to take. So one step at a time.
I want to introduce this concept to my audience. You and I, we talk about creating, you know, a series of podcasts together. And, you know, whether it's politics, whether it's AI, whether it's food, you know, I really want to kickstart this idea together with you. And even if it's just a short sub-series.
Yeah. Little Saigon and Vietnam as a country come together.
I love it.
We cannot forget the past. Yeah. And you have to honor the past.
Yeah.
And you have to really acknowledge what Vietnamese people living in the US have to go through. But because of that, because you honor that past, I want to be the connecting piece where I say, we understand the past and we want to support you. And all of those people guess what age they're at right now. They're in their 70s and 80s. I don't want to see them hold this thing with them forever. I want the next few years or the next 10 years, let us be there for you. Let us, like, I understand your pain and I want to be there for you.
Yeah.
I want to take care of you. I want to be able to, all of our kids to come together.
Yeah.
Our parents have sacrificed so much. They're going to transfer that wealth to you. Take care of them. How do we take care of them? There's so many other things. I know you're not gonna be cooking for them three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna be changing their diapers. We have to have some sort of social support for all of these people that paved the way, that built Little Saigon. You know, these are, you know, we call it gay goto, right? Like, these are people that built
roots.
Mm. They are the backbone of this community. And now they're getting older and yes, I mean, you're going to have a lot of them that very well off. And okay, I'm not talking about those people, but I'm not, yes, those two, but they're going to be people that are not going to have their kids around, you know, have to deal with cancer on their own. Like, where are those people? I want to be there for those people. And I know that our country, 100 million, you know, people of us overseas, and then the 2 million people of us here that in our 20s and 30s and 40s, that we want to be there for them, and now 50, be there for them and take care of them, and tell them that everything is going to be okay, and love trumps hate.
I agree.
Right, and then and I want to see that festival. They want to see our
people
coming together for the first time.
Yeah.
Unite.
Yeah.
And as you can see, all the young kids here, they already forgot about it. They already flying back to Vietnam and having fun.
Yeah.
They love it there.
Yeah.
What's stopping us from bringing our people together? Yeah. And I strongly believe that we have to bring our people together one way, shape, or form. And that's my life mission, right? My life mission is to bring the Vietnamese people from Vietnam and the people here and around the globe together. And
we share that mission.
I'm not shameful to
put it out there.
To put it out there and tell people that yes, I'm a crazy romantic, you know? I have a dream sort of guy. I'm still dreaming every day. And I strongly believe that we have to do it.
Yeah.
If not us, then who? If not now, then when?
Viet, chúc mừng năm mới. Happy New Year. We're going into the Year of the Horse, and I appreciate you sitting and spending time with me, and hopefully this next year we can create a sub-series together and we can
have
all this discussion about bridging and all this discussion about how we build, how we find similarities, even in the political world of like conservatives and liberals, and then Vietnam versus Vietnamese American diaspora. All of it needs to come together.
This is a crazy thing that we're going to talk about, and hopefully we have a series talking about just specific about AI, AGI thing. Unfortunately, the whole entire world is still revolving around China and the West, which is the US and Europe. Once we hit AGI first, I'll tell you this right now, try your very best not to die in the next 10 years. The very best, because we are going to extend human life.
Yeah, you believe that, huh?
I strongly believe it. for the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to find a way to outlive past 100. So if you can just
try to live,
try to like very best just to survive the next 5 to 10 years.
We're going to make it. Yeah.
I strongly believe cancer research is going to be solved. Protein folding is already, you know, alpha fold is already proving that we're going to solve the proteins, all of that. And protein folding, and then that would help,
longevity
of things. And people are going to, maybe straighten or, really stopping the shorten of the chromosomes, really get people to get past 100 or even 150 years. I strongly believe that. And at that time, I still strongly believe that, manufacturing is going to be solved. Logistics is going to be solved. Energy is going to be solved.
Yeah.
And I'm very hopeful and I'm very, very optimistic about the future and hopeful that I can be that part of that wave of investment to bring back to Vietnam.
Yeah. There's a book written by Peter Diamandis called Abundance.
Abundance, yes, correct. Abundance is great.
You really discuss this idea of abundance written by Diamandis. And it talks about, water being solved and vertical farming. You know, the book talks about all that, solar. And, I'm going to end on this question.
Only the energy is the only limit right now.
Right.
Energy is the only limit.
But they'll figure it out.
Yeah. And guess what? We will have a nuclear
fission. Yeah.
Fission. Yeah. Company, the first one, which is SpaceX, to do all the data centers and create energies and compute.
When you came on the podcast years ago, I was still in the mode of saying and asking, what does it mean to be Vietnamese, right? So I've now moved on to the second phase of the podcast. My question starting in 2026 now is, and I'm going to end with this question with you, is where do you see the evolution of the Vietnamese culture worldwide?
Evolution of Vietnamese culture worldwide.
And why is it important that we evolve our Vietnamese culture?
Very important. And I hope everybody can go on this. I don't know where it lives now. It used to be on Netflix. And it talk about music of Korean music, K-pop. It has nothing to do with anything, but as I was watching it, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be the way for you to be. So what they did was, right after the war with North Korea, South Korea, music sound very much like North Korea. So it's very sad. It's very old school. The acting is not going anywhere. There was a underground rap group that kind of like blow up kind of underground. And the government saw that movement and said, oh my God, like all these young kids having this kind of new wave of music. And what they did was very precedented.
Yeah.
Because they learned that from the Japanese culture. They say, hey, if the Japanese people can go from
bombed out,
World War II. And then, being hated by the whole entire world. And now every time that you say Japanese, like, oh my God, Hello Kitty, oh my God, sushi. We buy into it. So they were so good at it by exporting their culture. Mm-hmm. We could do that. And so what they did at that time, after the war, like in the 60s and the 70s, what they did was, we're going to double down on exporting culture. And so they say, okay, we're going to put one whole entire percent of GDP. Of revenue of GDP, 1%
entertainment
to entertainment. If you're doing entertainment, you get funding. I don't care what it is. So everybody was creating art. Yeah. Everybody was focusing on entertainment. And because of entertainment, beauty was following, fashion was following. And so it's exploded into this world exporting culture. Like, look it out. Music nowadays, like K-pop is everywhere. I strongly believe if the Vietnamese government would have just latched onto the idea of spending not even one whole percent, just half of a percent of GDP into entertainment, into art creation, liberal arts. And so in the past, and I posted this picture on my page, in the past where liberal art meets technology, created Apple, created Google, created Silicon Valley. I strongly believe with AI and AGI and liberal arts, that will be the explosion
of the Vietnamese culture.
Of the Vietnamese culture.
I love your answer. This conversation helps me out a lot too. And I'll tell you, I have a big problem being Vietnamese American because I feel trapped. I feel, you know, third cultured. I don't feel, because you grew up in Vietnam and, you know, so many of my friends grew up in Vietnam or grew up in America and they are white, right? And so there's a distinct identity. But hearing you talk today really offers like this sort of hope that Vietnamese Americans have a role in the world.
A huge role. Because essentially in Southeast Asia, we're going to be one of the strongest. They're going to want to get access to that, right? We're going to have, right now, we're going to 6X our GDP, right? We're going to be one of the best country that people can invest in. Right? Investing into Vietnam right now, probably going to be, or the future, probably going to be the key for a lot of people or a lot of asset management or strong asset classes to kind of come. So I strongly believe that if you can be that bridge, you'd be very strong. You're just well-positioned in the world. In Asia, we're going to be top 10. We're going to be top 20 economy in the whole entire world, everywhere. We will be number 20 or from 20th to 25th, largest economy in the world by 2050. And so that put us in a very strong position, like milk that position. And even in the culture here, you know, like, let's just take nail salons for some, you know, you're going to see a lot more high-end, very highly produced, very
curated nail shops,
nail shops that are coming that you're going to blow your mind. So just one of a few ways that for you to take a look at, you know, and that put nail shop into a hospitality category.
Thank you so much today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Always good to talk to you.
Always good, man.
It's just because we're talking to so many people.
Yeah.
You talk to so many people. And so for me, I also
Yeah, you have so many ideas, you know? You have
But it's not about the ideas. The vision has always been clear for
right,
me.
Right.
And so these are just the steps.
Right.
Yeah, to get there, so.
Awesome, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's a good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks.
Always.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.